everyone, and welcome to Team of Spirits, the podcast where each episode we discuss a different spooky story from around the UK. My name is Vicky, and I am here with my good friend, Sarah, who you may remember if you're from the other podcast, from our Mystic Messenger episode. Hello, Sarah.
Hello, thank you for having me. I'm feeling suitably spooky, maybe.
Well, that's good. That's what we want here. So, Sarah, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yes. So, hi, everyone. I'm Sarah. I am a visual novel designer, inclusion consultant in my day job, like to draw a bit, like to talk a lot, I love tea, I like folklore. I think that's my comprehensive introduction.
I mean, that's all we need, you know. I've got my tea here. I drank coffee for the last one, but this time I've got tea.
What tea is it? I noticed it's in a rather nice mug. I did notice.
Oh yeah, the mug that somebody bought me.
Yes, I'm not doing that thing like, oh, that's a nice mug because I bought it, but it is a nice mug and I did buy it, so.
Yeah, well, it's a great mug, and it's got a little cover, and it's even got like a tea strainer that you can take out if you need to, but it's great for loose leaf, which is amazing. I love it. The Capricorn tea from Bird and Blend's Zodiac range.
Oh, is it good?
And it's really nice, really nice. But so the description for the Capricorn tea is it's got Sri Lankan black tea, licorice, cardamom, and whatever natural flavoring is. It sounds a bit sus, really, doesn't it?
You just said licorice, and it licorice put me right off. I was like, ugh.
Oh, you're not a fan. Well, that's the thing. Like, this is a bit hit and miss because some of the teas are really nice so far. I've not tried all of them yet. The Capricorn, I think, is actually my favourite so far. But there was one that was chamomile, and I'm not into that.
See, that's my jam, that. Love a bit of chamomile.
Chamomile is probably the only tea that I outright do not like. Oh, well, next time I see you, I can pass you the chamomile ones, if you like.
This has already turned into a really productive podcast for me personally, because I now get tea for free.
Just get paid in tea.
This is going well. Like, that's one of my currencies. It's one of my preferred currencies, so that works out well for you.
Yeah, so how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. I mentioned I'm a visual novel indie dev, and I'm doing some solo projects that are kicking off, and they're all based around folklore. What a great tie-in for me to bring this up. Originally it was like the folklore of the British Isles, but I'm now trying to incorporate a bit more inclusion and a bit more like, oh, but what happens beyond British shores? How does that impact, you know, the timeline of the folklore creatures that are in this story is very different to how human societies developed. So there's some interesting differences between like, oh, horrible, nasty things we don't like to talk about, like colonialism and how the mythical creatures have dealt with that. So it's quite interesting. I'm looking forward to it. But I'm doing it in like really small episodes. So it's almost like an anime episode length.
Oh, okay. That's so cool.
But it's a game.
Yeah.
Rather than like massive games. So it's like you could do like three in a stream and it would only be like an hour, because there's so many games that are like, oh, 70,000 words and they're really long, and I'm like, but unless you're really into it, you're probably not going to want to stream this, and your fans are going to be like, I don't really like it. But I'm like, what's 20 minutes? Like, it's a mediocre episode of Yu-Gi-Oh. Like, you've watched that. You've spent 20 minutes watching Yu-Gi-Oh.
So yeah, probably play my would. Game instead. Cool. Hey, that sounds amazing. I can't wait to see them and try them. Cool. So, shall I tell you the story?
Tell me the story. Let's go.
So, this is actually my favorite ghost story of all time. So, Have you heard of the Roman ghosts of York?
I have heard the story. I would like you to tell me again. I would appreciate Okay,
cool. I mean, I was actually going to do this for the first episode, but I was like, Helen definitely knows the story because we've been on ghost walks together.
I feel like when I heard it, it was on like a tour and it was like a 90 seconds. Oh yeah, this happened, but we're going to move on. So it was like, there wasn't a lot of detail. So please tell me again.
Okay, cool. Well, first of all, I have to get my tea and get comfy, everyone. And I'll put on my reading voice again. And this is the story of Harry Martindale and the Roman Legion ghosts. It's lunchtime on a cold February morning in 1953 in the city of York. In the cellar of a grand townhouse known as the Treasurer's House, a lone plumber named Harry works away on top of a short ladder, drilling into the ceiling to install pipes. It's quiet. The only sound that could be heard was the lone hammer echoing around the room that was lit by a single lamp. Suddenly, somewhere in the distance, Harry heard the distinct sound of a horn. Unbothered by this, he continued his work, assuming a radio was blaring somewhere in the building above. Then, there was another sound of the horn, louder this time, and as the plumber listened, he could swear it came from within the wall itself. He paused his work, glancing down from the top of the ladder, until the figure of a man in Roman armour emerged from the wall. He was cut off at the knees. He walked steadily, paying the plumber no mind as he once again disappeared into the wall opposite. In horror, the plumber fell from the ladder, scurrying into the corner of the room for some semblance of safety. A second man, atop a large horse, marched steadily through the wall, following the first. Once again, no feet could be seen until they reached the old Roman road excavated towards the other side of the room. There, the feet and hooves could then be seen before they continued their ghastly walk into the wall opposite. In pairs, the soldiers marched, ignoring the man who sat terrified in the corner of the cellar, feet only appearing when the road they walked on was revealed. Harry would not move. Every soldier looked worn, with stubble on their cheeks, but hanging from each man's waist was a sword, and in their hands a round shield was carried. The plumber sat frozen. At any moment one of the soldiers could take their sword and strike him. But none of them noticed him. Their dead eyes stared straight ahead, ignorant of the walls they emerged from, walked into, and of the building above their heads, and of the man cowering before them. After the last man had left the room, all was silent. The plumber got to his feet and fled the cellar without a single look back.
So I've heard a version of that, which is not specific to a plumber named Harry. It was like it is known that there is a group of Roman centurion group who wander through the streets of York at night. Like, it wasn't as specific as that. It was more of a generic, the ghost can be seen. The thing that really made me laugh about some of the details is when you said unbothered, it just made me think of that meme, like, moisturised, thriving in my lane, unbothered. And I was like, no, don't think of that. That's really inappropriate. This is a scary story. So, that meme happened and I was like, no, stop. And I feel like Harry paid a lot of attention to the physical details. I was like, does Harry have a thing? Because he was like, oh, they've got some stubble, them boys. Oh, they've been places. It's like, maybe Harry's like, oh, they're a bit of all right. I don't know.
Maybe he did. Who knows?
How would you describe them then, Harry? Well, they had some great stubble. Like, kind of more vaguer details than that, Harry. That's real specific. So sorry. It was really nice stubble. You had to be there.
So, any thoughts about the story?
I think he takes it pretty well. Because, like, he sees all of these ghosts, and he's just, like, mouth agape. And they're just walking past, and he's just, like, mouth agape. None of them have noticed. And he kind of lets them all go. Like, in pairs of 20. He's just, like...
so patient, yeah.
stood there for a really long time, just letting this happen. And it's like, he waits for them to all go, and then he freaks out. I'm like, that's really polite, Harry. You could have run out straight away. But he's like, I'm going to wait.
Yeah, that actually didn't occur to me until now.
Very considerate and inspired, right? Go on. Ah! Hell, man!
Yeah.
when he fell off the ladder, that could have been another ghost added to the collection, wouldn't
yeah,
it, really?
The
Chubby didn't fall and crack his head open. That's really grim, isn't it? Sorry.
yeah. Then the story would have been about even more ghosts. Okay, so... just to give you kind of a basic background of York, I'm not going to go into the entire history of York because we would be here till next week if I did that.
Well, we'll be here for like thousands of years because York's been around a while.
The city of York dates back to the year 71 AD.
And for the youth who are listening, it's so old that Toy Story hadn't come out yet. That's how old it is.
It was established by the Romans when they defeated the Brigantian Celtic tribe who resided in the north. Fun fact, there were only two women in charge of different Celtic tribes, and the Brigantes were one of them, and the other one was Boudica down south.
What a shame that they didn't win, but never mind.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So whenever the Romans would defeat a tribe, they would build a fort there just to keep an eye on them, basically. So that's what York started as. It was a Roman military fort.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So Dr. Patrick Ottaway, who is an archaeologist and was on the documentary that I watched about this, I will post a link in the show notes to that documentary if people want to see it for themselves. But he said that the site of the main Roman headquarters was located where the medieval cathedral of York Minster now stands. So if anyone is familiar with the city of York, I used to live there for 3 years. So I am a little bit biased about this place.
You have intimate knowledge of where you're talking about.
But yeah, if people know the city where the giant cathedral is, that is on the site of where the headquarters was. And there is an excavation of a Roman road 12 feet below ground in the Minster. So you can actually pay to go and see this. I've never done it myself, but it sounds really fun, actually. It's something that's on my list to do whenever I go back.
It is pretty cool.
Yeah, and fun fact, that was actually where I had my graduation.
That is so cool. You were over ground of a Roman...
The York yeah. Minster Cathedral is actually where my graduation ceremony was held, which is really cool. It kind of blows my mind now to think that I was graduating above this Roman road. That's...
Mine was a dentist college, so... I didn't even do dentistry, everyone. It was just that the building was originally a dentist college. I would not touch science, so there you go. Yours is way better than mine. Yours is way better than mine. Well, now you can be a tourist all over again.
Yeah, I'll take Shadow when he comes to visit.
You can save it for a special tourist to come with you. And you can really show off and be like, let's go into the catacombs. Don't worry. We're going to see the Roman excavation site. And they're like, ooh, I do like a bit of excavation. Maybe. You're interested and that's what matters. So you're, like, you're just dragging them. They're just collateral. You're like, oh, he really wants to come. Don't ignore his face. He's always wanted to come here, not me. Doing it for him.
So after the Romans departed from Britain, when the empire fell around 410 AD, the city was settled by the Angles, who were Germanic people that settled in Britain. And fun fact, they were the people who became the Anglo-Saxons.
I almost said it, and then I was like, no, don't do that. Don't be that person, but you did it yourself, so it's fine.
So in the 7th century, King Edwin of Northumbria sought to reclaim the city of York, and it became Edwin's chief city, which I don't know much about the monarchs prior to 1066. So kind of the fact that there were different kings of different just areas of the country, not the entire country, kind of fascinates me. And I knew that anyway, but like I've never really gone into detail of it. So I definitely want to look more into that and learn more about that, about the different kings and hopefully queens that were there. It's just interesting. I mean, a lot of my history knowledge, let's face it, comes from horrible history, so...
Like, my education degree, meh, horrible histories, yeah.
I didn't learn as much from my A-level history as I did from horrible histories, I'll tell you that. Okay, so during the Viking invasions of Britain in 866, York was a key target as it became a bustling Anglo-Saxon hub. So, you know, prime target, like, what are you going to attack a city that's got a lot of people and resources?
That's just smart, isn't it, really? They clearly played... They played a lot of, I'm going to say this and now I'm going to write it, it's going to sound really dumb. They have clearly played a lot of video games where they're like, oh my god, we have to get the place with the best resources. They played a lot of like, probably playing Minecraft, being like, we need to take the place with the most resources that's closest to all of the gold. It's the only way we'll survive. It's not like those games were inspired by war. No, it was the other way around. They had their own ye olde version of Minecraft, which was called real life.
Yeah, those Vikings and their video games, you know.
Why is there no tutorial? Why is there no tutorial in real life for the first stage of my existence?
I wonder what they'd think of Assassin's Creed Valhalla. Would they be like, no, that's not accurate. That didn't happen.
You only tell me how to run, but you didn't tell me how to do anything useful, like pay my bills. Press the X button. I'm like, it doesn't work. I still want my money. Help. The tutorial doesn't cover this. Help me. I don't know why you brought me here. I am going to take it seriously from now on. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, we need a comedy aspect because, you know, like, I'm not funny and I don't know if people come here expecting humour, but you ain't going to get it from me, so... But yeah, if you do want to learn more about Viking York, definitely take a trip to Jorvik Viking Centre. It is so much fun and it's a really good time. Really good.
Yes, and for those who don't know, there is an amazing ride. Like, if you want to sit on a little cart and be taken around a load of scary animatronics, there's nowhere better. Maybe in the north of Britain. Because I hadn't been for a long time and then we went together. It kind of blew my mind. Because it was way better than I remembered. It was way better than I remembered it being.
So, yeah, as I said, if I went into the full history of York, we'd be here for ages. The history is long, but I'm sure we'll touch on different periods over the course of this podcast. I will definitely cover York again. There are so many ghost stories. It's such a hot spot for the paranormal.
It's kind of spooky hot spot, isn't it?
So, yeah. I'll definitely be covering more stories. This is not a way for me to keep you coming back, but, you know.
Don't forget to listen to it regularly, everyone, because hot spot York will return.
Exactly. It will be back. Okay, so let's focus on Roman York, or... Iboricum, as it was named in Latin. And I don't know why I keep having to read Latin on this show, but it happened in the previous episode. So Iboricum means a yew tree place. So under the Romans, it started as, it started as a military fort and then became a cosmopolitan city later on under Roman occupation. So during excavations, people have found altars to Mars, Hercules, Jupiter, and Fortune, suggesting that not only did people live there, but they also worshipped there. They brought their religion to England and to the city of York.
I don't know a lot about... Well, no, I don't say I know a lot. I know nothing. I know literally nothing about Roman history. I wonder about the age of conscription. Like, how old were these soldiers? they may not have been that old anywhere. You know, they probably didn't have an age of like, oh yeah, you've got to be old enough to start. They'd have just been like, you're fit, off you go.
Yeah, and that's true. I never thought about kind of the age of conscription or anything like that, because I guess it would be a lot younger, because, you know, they didn't really have,
yeah.
Well, teenagers didn't exist back then, so, and they didn't really have the child labour laws. So, yeah, that's something I've not thought about, maybe.
Well, they would have had, like, the opposite ends of, like, old and young, because they wouldn't have had any kind of discrimination of age. So you might have had really old, little shrunken men, and really young teenagers.
Because that's the thing. He did say they were smaller. So, and, you know, they do say that people back then were shorter in height. So, yeah, I do wonder about that.
Could be. I don't know. I don't want to misquote the Romans. Who might be like, we have a very good age policy. Excuse you. What do you know?
But yeah, Yew Tree Place. I wonder if, like, was there just one yew tree just there, or did they pick a favourite? What happened there?
I mean, if there was, imagine being like, that tree is so good, that's what we're going to call this whole place. And they're like, what, really? Yew tree, please. Like, there's nothing else here that's caught your attention. Nope, just that tree. And like, how boring was it if that was all they were? They were like, that's it, that's what we've got, that's our tweet, that's their hit tweet, that's it.
They only had 40 characters to name it.
And they're like,
But do you know why the Romans named Manchester, or whatever the Latin equivalent of Manchester is?
No.
Well, basically, whatever the Latin for Manchester is means breast-shaped hill. So, you know, we're just named after boobs.
It's a bit horny, that, isn't it? I mean, it's a bit unnecessary. Like, they were like, boobs. Should we do it?
They're clearly boob people instead of butt people.
See that right there, men? You know what that looks like? And they're like, yeah, let's call this place that. Yeah, let's go. Like, lads on tour. We're just taking over a place. Yew Tree Place was a bit boring. Let's go for something a bit blue. Do you know what I mean? And I'm like, yay.
We apologise to any Romans listening.
You know, I'm really sorry if I've made the Romans out to be degenerates. They may have not been at all. I've just made it sound like they're really stupid and degenerate, and they're not. I'm sorry. This is a me problem. It's not a them problem. I'm the degenerate, not them.
Anyway. So, there are still parts of Roman Ooh. York you can see today. A Roman column stands in the Minster yes. Yard, which I'm giggling because in my notes it must have autocorrected. Ooh. And it's put Monster Yard, which sounds appropriate, to be fair.
Oh, yeah, the Monster Yard in York. It makes sense.
It was discovered under the Minster during an excavation and was gifted to the city in 1972. So other remains you can see are remains of the Roman Basilica building, and they're visible in the undercroft of York Minster. Again, like I said, you can go down there and view it. It's fun. You should do it. There's the multangular tower of York City walls. It's a multi-period structure based on the southwest corner tower of the Roman legionary's fortress. So that's within the York Museum Gardens, which is another place I've never really been to that much, to be fair.
It's like so basic at this point. Why aren't you going under? What is wrong with you? Going to the top.
Yeah, don't go up on the roof. I mean, I've never done it because I'm It makes me nervous.
So you don't know York as well as you think you do you? Really? All these places you've not been to. That's all I'm hearing.
I guess I don't. I guess I shouldn't really say that, should I? Mm-hmm. Well, when we're at uni, we used to have like tourist days. Like the end of the year, we used to do a York tourist day. Particularly me and Helen. And we'd go and do some stuff, but I guess we just didn't get to everything. So there's also the Roman Bath Pub and Museum. And I think that's downstairs. And I'm not sure if there's a... Wait, no. I better not say that because I'm not 100% sure if there is. And, you know, there's already a lot of misinformation in this world. And I don't want this podcast to add to it. So unless I 100% know for sure, I'm not going to say that.
That was a very sensible interjection you had with yourself just then. I didn't even have to get involved. You're like, no, don't do it self. Okay, I won't.
But there is something else I think they have down there. Again, it's downstairs, but yeah, I'm not sure about that one. So yeah, but there's definitely a bath anyway. There are an old Roman bath, so that's fun.
And not just wanting like your own house, you can go see a really old bath, like a really cool bath that like military people sat in.
Well, you know, it was a communal bath, so who knows what went on in there.
A communal time. I just did air quotes, communal time.
There's a fragment of foundations of the Western Curtain Wall, which are visible through a glass floor in a cafe near Bootham Bar, but it doesn't actually say which cafe.
Okay. Is that like a tourist trap? Like, you've got to go find the cafe with them. Spend all your money here, please.
Yeah, it adds to the intrigue. And then a large number of Roman finds are now housed in the Yorkshire Museum, so you can go there. And the York Museum Gardens, again, has a Roman sarcophagi on open display, which I don't know what they mean by open. That's kind of unnerving.
It's just there. Look at him. That's a dead guy. I feel like if you want to see the most things, just go to these gardens. They seem to have a pretty decent value for money ratio for spooks of the Roman variety.
Yeah, because they don't have anything dedicated to the Romans in York, which you think it would, given that, you know, they started the city. But I guess not. But I'd love to see something like that.
I think the thing is, though, you'd be choosing, wouldn't you? Like, eagle to the Viking thing,
yeah,
eagle to
yeah.
the Roman thing, and I don't know which of them has the better pull. It wouldn't bother me, but
yeah, I guess.
Imagine they're like, oh my god, we have to really sell Vikings now. The Romans are here, and they're spoiling everything.
Yeah, so hopefully this has given you an idea of the scale of Roman York and what was happening there, you know, that people were living there, that it was a real metropolitan city that had been established.
And organised religion.
Yeah.
Which is like, I guess when military's there, you kind of would assume they would have that kind of infrastructure as well, but like, sounds like they have quite a lot of gods specifically.
Yeah, and obviously to have them well preserved means they must have been pretty permanently built, so that to me, because I don't think soldiers would permanently build them. I think they might just have these things temporarily, but yeah,
they must have been pretty well built, unlike our roads. Eh?
Yeah,
I'm just sick of like potholes on the roads, and I'm like, I bet the Romans didn't have this problem, did they, when they built roads?
Yeah, I suppose not.
All roads lead to Rome. No, all roads lead to potholes on other roads. That's what they all lead to. They say, you know, you get old. No, but also, there were like donkeys and stuff on there. I don't mind. I'm like, these are like cars, man. They're not making holes in the road. Like, I understand animals doing it, but I'm like, what happening? What happening? Why? It's not part of this. Harry doesn't care about this. He saw loads of ghosts. He don't care about the potholes in the road, Seraphine.
I don't know. Maybe potholes were a thing in the 50s as well. Maybe he did care.
Harry in 1954 was like, God damn it, those potholes. Here I am doing this repair work, but really my mind's over there. And he was like, oh my God, there's a man with no legs. Okay, my priorities have changed now.
Okay, so let me tell you a bit about Harry.
Yes, tell me about Harry.
So this is from the York Press, and it said that this was actually his written after his passing, sadly. But yeah, it says he saw the ghosts at 18 years old. Wait, and I think he was like an apprentice. I think I saw somewhere that it said he was an apprentice. So I guess he chose not to pursue that career permanently, because he did go on to become a policeman, and he did that for, I think it said, about 30 years, And sadly, he did die in 2014 at the age of 79.
That's good innings. That's good innings.
And the article said that he was so frightened and in shock after the incident that he took 2 weeks off work. 2 weeks!
That's fair.
Which I feel like if that was today, like, if that was a millennial or a Gen Z, like, there'd be people up in arms about that. Be like, oh, they're too lazy, they don't want to work. As we get often.
Yeah, to be fair, what you'd also get is a lot of people with TikTok being like, oh my god, I'm here at the place where it supposedly happened. I don't see any ghosts. They can't have been real then. I'm like, that's kind of why they don't happen every day. They don't come every day for you, sweetheart.
It's not like clockwork or anything.
You should have been here by now. Those ghosts should have been here by now. Where's the little guy? I don't see him. I also feel like, though, like, Harry must have... Like, how do you just, like, get back on the road after that? Like, I feel like that's quite an exceptional thing to see. And then you're like, well, I guess life goes on, but that's so bizarre. So weird.
Yeah, but it said that people actually laughed at his story. Yeah. So he actually kept quiet about it until he was interviewed in the 70s. So it took him 20 years to fully be interviewed about this.
I think as well, like, he... Yeah, like, whether people believe it's real or not, it fundamentally affected his life, because even later on in his life, he was still talking about it. So I'm like, he genuinely believes he saw something. And anything else, no one else can validate, so...
Yeah, and to be fair, I am pretty much inclined to believe that this happened. I mean, I want to believe it happened anyway. Yeah. Definitely.
Well, yeah, because you just don't feel valid, do you? If someone's like, oh, it's a load of rubbish. Mm. And I think as well, like, the attitude around the supernatural in this country changed to a degree, because there was a lot of, like, that kind of tied up with religion and the supernatural and it being perceived as, like, a cult and whatever. But I'm like, but, you know, regardless of that, like, if it's a paranormal activity event that's happened, we should learn about it, regardless of what your stance on anything else is. It's like, you know, we should learn and we should understand what happened.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, values changed. There was an interest and an appetite to find out more about that kind of thing. Because I think, you know, all over Britain, not just York, but York's a hotspot, but like in Edinburgh, London, you hear these stories about these things that happened. And it's like, people just didn't know how to talk about it. There was no interest in it. It was like that thing at the pub where people go, oh yeah, he's a bit weird. But then it became a bit of a, no, people want to hear. And it's weird because in the Victorian times, the British had this obsession with, like, penny dreadfuls, and we wanted that gritty grimness, like, because that was kind of how we taught moral lessons. Then that all dissolved for a bit, and then it returned in culture as a point of interest. So I think it's a really interesting... You can explore Britain's attitudes towards its own heritage and its own culture. Like, because there's certainly a period in the Victorian times where the scandal of horror was like, oh, this is exciting and provocative.
And there's the whole spiritualist movement in the Victorian era as well, which is really interesting to me, which I don't know if I'll cover, but I kind of... It'll probably crop up again in this podcast, but I don't know if I want to cover it as its own subject. I don't know. We'll see.
Then we had a period of blandness and, oh, we're going to be conservative and stuff. We don't want to talk about it. And then it kind of came back.
Yeah. And it did actually say, I read somewhere that his son was saying that he never took any money from this, so... He never made a penny out of the story. So that kind of gives it more credibility in my eyes, because he's not just made it up just, you know, for a bit of cash or something like that.
Yeah. Well, I think there's like a thing as well, like the divergence between what we would call folklore and what we would call paranormal activity. That can differ as well, because I think, you know, Britain's had a very long history of a lot of supernatural events and stories and things happening, and our own oral tradition has been to tell those stories. So I always think it's a testament to the person who tells the story that they're like, you know, regardless of the heckling, regardless of how I will be perceived, I will share that story. And I'm like, whether you believe in it or not, it is part of our heritage to share these stories and pass them down. Because if he never said anything, we wouldn't be talking about it.
Yeah, and he actually said, he didn't know. He was asked if he believed in ghosts. And he said he didn't know, but he said, I only believe in what I saw, which is quite poignant to me. So there was another quote from him that I found. This was from the documentary, and I found this really, again, really poignant, actually. He said, terror is a difficult word. I think what I felt in here was worse than terror. And I can assure you, your hair does stand on end. So I'm like, he definitely felt it. Definitely. Yeah. And he even said they looked the same as you or I. Like they did not look, you know, like, I did actually, because I listened to a podcast trying to get another perspective about this. And they said that they were translucent. And this is directly from him from an interview. He said they looked the same as you or I. So I don't know where they got that information from. I won't say the podcast because I don't want to I don't want to undermine them or anything, but I couldn't see anywhere where that said, because that's what he said in that documentary. So I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Absolutely take his word for it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like, that's from the horse's mouth, so to speak. Ironic, because there was a horse there, which, can we talk about the ghost horse for a second? Because that is
that's the bit that would mess me up. Like,
yeah.
I mean, as scary as the man without the legs is, because that's scary.
Yeah.
A ghost horse. I'm tapping out of this. Like, because the thing is, if he didn't look like a ghost, if it was real, and it was in century, you know, room in a, like, kind of pageantry.
Yeah.
You'd be like, what the actual hell is going on? Like,
yeah.
There's these real dudes walking through. There's honestly. They're walking through the walls.
Yeah.
You'd be like, am I having some kind of episode? Like, because the thing is, that's too weird to make up.
Yeah.
You'd make it more aesthetic if you were going to be like, oh no, you know, I'm just going to make a story. I'm like, no, that's too bizarre.
Yeah.
And we now know that historically it makes sense what you said.
So exactly.
Like, he didn't just make it up. He was like, oh, do you know what would be amazing, man? Made up there was a horse and there was a dude with noise, but those details are way too specific. I just conjured that up out of my head.
Yeah, it's mind-blowing, because I just can't, so the horse must have looked like you or I as well.
Yeah, can you imagine if you were, doing a bit of work and you're up a ladder, and then a horse comes past and you're on the road, and you're just like...
What? Yeah.
What are you doing here? Believe the stables that way. Oh, there's no stables. Well, I'm in the middle of a
city centre. Oh, honestly, like, I need to look more into ghost animals, because that is something you do not hear a lot of, and I'm just wow.
I've got a story.
Oh,
small story. So there is a book that's called The Lore of the Land, and it's about English ghost stories, basically. And there's one in Dorset, I believe.
Okay.
It's definitely down south. And it is about a group of men who went to a pub and there was a ghost goose. This goose, screamed at them. And they were terrified. And they ran away. And people like me, you were just drunk. Like, this is not
real. Yeah.
And this group of guys, they were like, no, the ghost goose is real. And they're like, but it was kind of late, and maybe we were really drunk, and maybe it wasn't real, but it was real. But then it kept happening. So people were like, no, actually, there is something to it. So aside from the ghost horse,
wow,
there was at least a ghost goose.
A ghost goose and a ghost horse.
Maybe it was the original untitled goose game, based on this story.
I just want to introduce them, and then they go on adventures together, because that sounds wholesome.
That sounds like too nice. Like, imagine, but they don't realize they're scary. They just think they're pals.
Yeah.
When all these humans keep running away.
Yeah.
You've got Mr. Horse. He's like, well, you know.
I'm claiming the copyright to this, by the way. No one steal it. But yeah, what was really interesting is he did give further more detail than the stubble. I will get to that. But he gave information about like the dress they were wearing. So he said he said they were all wearing the same uniform, but they didn't look smart. They looked kind of disheveled. Tired. Disheveled. Like they'd been wearing it for a while, and you know, it sounds like they've been coming back from like some kind of long march or something. So yeah, they're probably not going to be like sparkling or anything. And don't forget, you know, they had communal baths.
I was going to say, back in the day, I don't think anyone was sparkling much.
Yeah.
Sparkling was a common...
Yeah. They did everything in those baths. Everything. So... Yeah, exactly. So they probably wouldn't look that clean. But yeah, so the... But he was like, yeah, they were wearing green tunics, which I found really interesting, because when I picture a Roman soldier, I picture the red tunic. Is that just me?
White, isn't it? It's pretty...
Yeah. But he said they were green. And when the archaeologist, who was on the documentary as well, Patrick Ottaway, he said, yeah, that sounds correct. And he actually dated them to the late first century, which was really interesting. And there was something that was a very contested originally, because he called the shields they were using round.
Yeah.
Whereas if you Google any image of a Roman soldier, the shield is always like squared.
Yeah.
Like that long rectangular kind of shape. Mm. So people were like, oh, like it's not real. Like you can't even get the shield shape right. But Dr. Ottaway did confirm that legionnaires wouldn't have carried those shields, but auxiliary troops, which were recruits from quote-unquote frontier areas and subject peoples. Yikes. That sounds like basically captured slaves, I think. Yeah. But there were some of those stationed there, and they would have had different equipment, and they would have had either rounded or oval shields.
Yeah.
So... I just find that really fascinating. And to me, it makes it more credible, because Google wasn't a thing back then. Like, he couldn't have just Googled it. And he actually said he had no interest in history. Like, it because he even said when he actually put the base of the ladder on the Roman road that was excavated. Yeah. And he was like, I knew whatever it was old, but I didn't really pay any attention to how old it was. It's like, just shoving his letter in there.
I think that's something that even we couldn't appreciate now. But even kids, the youth now really can't appreciate is that like finding information for stuff was actually hard.
Yeah,
like, you wouldn't be like you'd have to research before you went and did something sometimes. Yeah. So the fact that he had all this information as like tactile knowledge in his brain.
Mm-hmm.
And he had no interest in history at all. I'm like, yeah, that seems pretty remarkable to me. That's not just like
a thing. Yeah, he could quite easily say, oh yeah, I have no interest in history, but really he's got like 10,000 books at home. Mm-hmm. But I just find it really difficult. At 18, but when you're training to be a plumber.
And access to that information where he was at that time. Mm-hmm. Again, like, academics probably went to libraries as much as everyday people.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
I don't know much about him, but like socioeconomically, maybe he wouldn't have gone to a library that much.
Maybe.
Don't know.
Yeah. I don't know.
But yeah, I definitely believe in his credibility.
Me too. So, I believe, absolutely.
I believe in Harry.
I do. It was just that bit that really got me. When he went on to describe it, because he was like, I could see like the plumes on the helmet, which we all know Romans have those. But it was the little details, and that was what the documentary was saying. It was saying that it was the little details that really confirmed it for a lot of people. Mm. It just fascinated me. And the documentary did say that he wasn't alone in seeing the soldiers, but I couldn't really find much information about other documented cases, which kind of, I feel, is kind of a bit of a letdown for me, because I'm just like, oh, well, I would love to have heard other people's accounts too.
I feel like they, so do you know I said I went on a tour of York and they kind of anecdotally discussed Romans appearing in groups and walking through the city. That is quite common. Even though it's not that specific group in that specific place, like the vague oral tradition of they've been around, like that's pretty common in York. I've heard that, and I'm not that well read up on York and ghosts themselves.
So I mean, I want to believe that other people have seen these because I actually really want to believe this happened personally, and maybe that's me being a little bit biased, but it's because I find it so fascinating. I'm like, just wow. But let's get on to kind of the kind of theories. So very quickly then, obviously ghosts is the main theory, but there's also like this whole time, you know, the whole time slip thing, like, oh, maybe he it was that kind of thing. But to me, I think, does something not have to happen? Like, because he wasn't moving until he fell off the ladder. Like, to from what I've heard of time slips, people have to be actively walking into somewhere. So I don't know, but I want to believe.
My personal feeling on time slips is that you're trying to scientifically prove something that's scientifically not provable.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I know that they're meant to be supernatural paranormal events, but I'm like, if you're trying to find a reason why a thing happened to the extent you're like, oh, it's a time slip, it's like, you could then similarly just be like, well, it's a ghost. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It does feel like a really big scientific proving of a thing that could have just happened anywhere.
Yeah.
But I know different people feel different ways about it, but my personal thing with time slip theories is you could just also accept that they're probably ghosts.
Yeah.
You don't have to try and get a scientific explanation for a thing that's clearly not a normal event.
Yeah. What do you think overall, to start to wrap things up?
I think it's a really interesting story because usually a lot of ghost stories, the intention is there's either a moral lesson or, oh, it's spooky. Oh, they were provocative towards me. The disinterest element is what is so interesting to me.
Yeah.
Like, these ghosts aren't there to haunt him. They're not there to warn him.
No.
They're literally doing their thing.
Yeah.
And I think, again, like, to me, that's really interesting because if you're going to narratively make up a story, you'd be like, oh, and then the ghost came to me and then he did a thing. And it scared me, but I'm like, no, these ghosts didn't give a damn. They were literally just going about the business. I find that interesting. And that almost makes me more inclined to think it's real.
Yeah,
Because that is like a kind of, they weren't there to haunt that man. They weren't there to cause him any kind of disservice.
No.
It just happened, and he happened to be there and see at the same time. So I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, I agree, because It's one of those things where it's like, well, yeah, people can write it off and it was just one guy alone. So, but I find it, there's something about it that just makes it really, really hard for me to believe that he just kind of made this up. He never asked for money, never took anything for it. So, you know,
and this is a personal opinion, I think that I'm comfortable that not everything in the world can be explained. I mean I'm religious, so of course I'm like that. But also, like, it's really important that we're not scared of things we don't understand.
And when
people disprove and diss ghosts and stuff, it's like, it's because you don't want to accept it's real because it's not within the realm of your understanding.
Exactly.
So from Harry's case, everyone was like, oh, that's ridiculous, that can't have happened. And subsequently, he was like, I can't talk about it. But I'm like, if people were more comfortable with the unknown, then you go, do you know what? That could have happened, and that's crazy.
Yeah.
But it's not offensive. It's not scary. It's like, wow, that's an amazing event that happened. So I think people need to accept we cannot explain everything.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Because actually, the world is way more comforting.
Yeah.
We don't know all the answers.
Exactly.
It just happens because it happens.
Yeah.
There doesn't need to be a reason all the time. So that's my take on it.
Yeah, I agree.
Can I share my ridiculous story?
You can. Let's go into the next segment. And Sarah, tell me a story.
Incredible. Right. So I'm going to send you a link to this because it sounds so ridiculous. It doesn't sound like it's real.
I'm not going to read it until you.
Okay. 71-year-old Anne Hughes was seen standing outside the Best One convenience store. She was lifted 7 foot in the air after getting trapped in the shop shutters. Then someone graffitied her on the shop shutter, so she is immortalized like she was on the CCTV footage.
Is this in the UK?
Yeah, this was in Wales.
Okay, this is typical British humour, this. Like, terrible thing.
On the video, she's not distressed at all. So on the video, she's very slowly like, oh God. And she's just like trying to hold a little Zimmer frame bag thing. And she just waits really patiently. And the dude like runs out the shop, realises what has happened. She seems quite calm. She's kind of like, oh, hey there. Foot in the air. The dude is like trying to quickly bring her down. He just puts her down. So, you know, that would happen. Ha ha, really funny. But no, someone decided that on the shutter, they would literally graffiti paint her hanging in the air. And then not only did they do all of that, Anne stood next to the mural of herself on the shutter.
Yeah, I can see the picture.
Completely unbothered. She's just there with a cup of tea, just like, oh yeah, someone did a picture of me hanging in the air with my bag of shopping.
That's just Britain. That's how we deal with things like this. Wow. I've got no words for that.
I'm gonna just give you a quote.
Okay.
The graffiti artist said. So sorry, spray artist. I had seen the video quite early on, and my wife and I have both laughed about it. So when I saw the message asking me to paint it, I said yes straight away. The father of two went out at 10 p.m. on Thursday and spent 2.5 hours spraying the mural, free using an image from the CCTV as reference. He then is quoted to say, Anne was happy with the outcome, and that's the main thing. I think she found it really funny and has been a good sport about it
all. Wow.
So it was like a funny story, but it's obviously like a really nice story as well. Like nothing bad happened.
I thought you were going to tell me a horror story at first. Like that started off like a horror.
But also, Mrs. Hughes was quoted to say, I'm learning to live with the fame. I'll never hear the end of it. The show was completely open and I screamed the shopkeeper's name. Thank goodness he came out and lowered the shutter a little bit and managed to get me in his arms. I just can remember him saying, just grab my head. And I was worried I was going to fall. I was pointing towards the floor. Whilst Mrs. Hughes was shaken up, she was not injured.
Oh, good. So okay, that's what I was afraid of.
A funny headline. I will not. I think people struggle to beat that because it's a pretty amazing headline. And I was like, yes, I've been waiting to find something good. And I was like, oh, this is great.
So Helen brought me a pigeon. You brought me a lady in the air.
A lady in the air who's immortalised through graffiti.
Both airborne stories.
That's the theme now. The next guest also has to bring one.
So something something. But yeah.
It has been a pleasure.
Yes,
thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for joining.
I'd like to come again sometime.
Oh, yay! I'm so glad. I know you have to shoot off, so yeah. Do you want to promote anything before you go? Or
you should go and check out your streaming channel on Twitch.
No.
Yeah. Now.
Okay. Take care. Bye.
See you later. Bye.
Bye. So because Helen had to quickly shoot off, I will do the card pull for the month. So we're still using the Moonology deck. So let's see what message I can leave you with this month. Oh, a card came right out this month. Okay. So this card is the Waxing Moon. And the tagline is, the energy is gaining momentum. So, waxing moon. During the waxing moon cycle, hope springs eternal. this card is a very positive omen, indicating that you can create the reality you're dreaming of. Though it will take some work and you're not quite there yet, this is the time of energies rising up. Emotions are building too. Where do you want to go? And do you believe that you can get there? Either you can just keep meditating or focusing on your desired outcome, or you can make the courageous commitment to take more personal steps towards your goals. Whichever you decide, you are most certainly on the right track. And to attune to the moon, it says, I know I'm headed in the right direction. So that is the card pull. That's a really nice message, isn't it? Really, really nice, saying you're on your way, keep at it, and you will see results, whatever that thing is. So thank you so much for joining us for episode 2. If you do want to get in contact with us, we now have an email, which I should have set up sooner, but here we are. So it is teawithspiritspod@gmail.com. And you can send any questions, whatever, to that email address. And if you want to follow us on Instagram, it is Tea with Spirits Pod. And I will put images from today's episode up there. We've got images from last month's episode 2, so please do give us a follow there. I'm slowly working to kind of gather a social media presence, so if you could help us out with that, it would really be appreciated. And if you could leave us a review, we are now on Spotify. We are still working to get up on Apple. There's a few things I need to do for that. But we're on most podcast services now. So please do find us wherever you prefer. And I will let you know as soon as it's up on Apple Podcasts. Thank you so much for joining me. My name has been Vicky. And till next time. Bye-bye.